On this week's show, Joe Marler has...
No. What does it mean for the future of the game?
We've got a very special guest, Johnny Lacey, will be on the show to talk us through everything referee.
For an hour, we do not touch our eyes, nose, mouths, or balls to avoid the spread of coronavirus.
And other things. We also have a very, very interesting forfeit that Leinster fans are going to love.
Boom, 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 boom.
I forgot the dance. There should be a dance for it. Like, stir it up.
Boom, 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 boom.
That's good.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe together with Guinness. Well, on a weekend where Ireland weren't playing, we thought we'd have nothing to talk about. But we have loads to talk about.
You're excited, but I feel like there should be a more somber tone. Every episode could be our last, Barry. Last week I was in here chatting to Paul, the sound guy, and we were all, coronavirus, brilliant. No bother, it'll be grand. Everybody's being over dramatic. This week, I'm very nervous about it. It's getting real.
My wife was talking zombie apocalypse last night.
Yeah.
She's pretty confident she's watched enough shit zombie films that she's safe that we're...
I think that is the criteria to survive, watching more movies.
Yeah, yes. Stay inside, watch zombie films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you stockpiled?
No. I went to go to Dunn's the other day and it was just insane.
I just imagine in your garage you've just got like heaps of... T-shirts with the sleeves turned up.
Yes.
Just in case.
That's all I need. And my Nikes. I've stockpiled the Nikes because they're made in China.
Yeah,
my wife does my sleeves because I don't like them. They kind of get too long. Look a bit weird.
Speaking of zombie apocalypse, it reminds me of the 2011 World Cup. We were staying in Rotorua and we must have been a tier two, must have been maybe Russia or something we beat. And we went for a few drinks that night, went into town. But Rotorua is a small town.
Mm-hmm.
Potholes everywhere. Potholes / zombies.
What's it like to play for Ireland?
What's the best stadium you've ever played at?
So,
stake through the heart.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that's vampires.
Baseball bat.
Yeah.
To the head.
Anything really.
Yeah.
Anything. By the way, if you're a listener, if you're a Penguin listener, you don't know what a pothole is. you probably are one.
I think Donnacha O'Callaghan coined that phrase.
Yeah.
And
it exists outside of rugby now, you know.
It's the world over.
Yeah.
My dad starts calling people potholes now. I think it's brilliant. Like, it's proper. Yeah.
You know. Dad, you're one.
Anyway, so we were out for drinks, and then we went to like a social club or something, somewhere where no one else would have gone in Rotorua.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at Grand, we were around in there, and then we went on to somewhere else. And we were just getting pestered, and like we couldn't stay together as a team. The whole point was to go for drinks together and have the crack and have the team banter. And we were just getting strewn out across the town by zombies, mm. Right? And then...
Take a video for my friend. He's a huge fan.
Here, call him.
Yeah, yeah.
So then someone said, right, the next person to talk to a pothole has to buy the next round. Which turned us all into the most mean, selfish, rude people you ever see in your life. And we were just like walking down the street. If you're a pothole, I'd be like this. Not looking anywhere near you in case I had to buy the next round.
I was at a pub in Dublin before and this guy came up to me and he said, man, would you mind talking to a friend of mine on the phone? He's a huge fan. And I was like, for fuck's sake, I'm just trying to have a quiet drink here. And he put me on the phone and his friend just goes, Munster are shit. And do you know when you always think about stuff, how you should have reacted to something like hours later?
Yeah.
I was like driving home the next day going, I wish I'd got his phone and dropped it in a pint or something like that.
But it wouldn't have been his fault, I suppose.
Didn't I just handed it back?
thanks for that. Do you have to categorise your potholes? Because you probably have music potholes and then monster potholes.
Yeah.
More music ones?
No, they blend.
Oh, really? There's like a Venn diagram and a big overlap. Yeah, they're the worst
when they kind of... blend. Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm very.
Well, this could be our last show also with how we deal with the Joe Marler incident.
Yes. Yeah.
How are we supposed to deal with that?
I think.
What are we supposed to do?
It's so tempting to make light of it. And certainly my initial reaction was, that's funny. And I know people are losing their mind over it as well.
I know.
But like, obviously the impact on the game is, you know, if potentially, you know, people see that as an example, and then if there's an outbreak of people grabbing people's balls in the game, in 5 years' time, we'll look back and say, we should have stamped that out. Yes. Right at the start. Yeah. You just can't see that happening.
Do you reckon he was like, is there anything to do with people, you know, saying you shouldn't shake anyone's hands, that he was
maybe taking that
extra bit further and shake his dick?
We need to tread very carefully.
I know.
John Lacey's coming on. He's going to keep us right.
Yes, we have a special guest today. Johnny Lacey, former Munster player, Irish or international referee. And he's going to, kind of guide us through this. Because, it is tricky. My initial one was, this funny. And you know what? I saw something about Marler as a person. I saw an interview an article someone wrote. Like, he's a jester, he's a joker, he's a comedian. And he gave up international rugby last year because he didn't feel like he could be himself, and he felt like the game was kind of quashing his personality.
Is that what he said?
Pretty much, yeah. That's why I didn't realise, but this is what the article said. This is why he...
He's right. Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
So, like, if you take, our social norms that we all, you know, abide by and we apply ourselves to, they're very important. We need them, right? But then if you go to like a stand-up comedy, or if you watch a really funny film or something, you're kind of allowing yourself the freedom to look or listen to something that's going to go against your social norms, and it's going to be uncomfortable, but you're allowing it. It's not going to be PC, but you're like, let's just do it. It's grand. So it's fine because people understand that they're going to this and they're committing to it. So in rugby, when he does something like that, it's meant to be funny, tongue-in-cheek. He's trying to defuse the situation. Mm-hmm. That's what is clear. Like, when people say it was sexual assault, that's like such a grey area, because it wasn't a sexual thing he did, right?
No, I know. Well, but people could interpret it that way. I suppose the difference is, if he does that to a stranger, he obviously has a relationship with Alan, and he didn't expect him to react the way he did.
Mm.
He thought he was probably expecting either a scuffle, like maybe like the Haskell. The Haskell squirting water in the face, or he was expecting a laugh out of him, but he definitely did not. I'm certain he, first of all, he didn't mean it to cause any pain. And the law, we'll talk about some rules later on when Lacey comes on. If in our little zombie apocalypse game, if you mention laws, you have to buy the coffee after.
yes, I love it.
But the law is about like twisting or grabbing. He didn't twist or grab.
Mm.
That's not the same thing. Mm. So anyway, we'll pester Lacey about that.
Look, we've got loads to talk about, so I'd love to just get Johnny out now, because he's a fountain of knowledge and crack. So have you any referee run-ins? You're squeaky clean, I'd imagine.
I only had a handful of, I might have only captained Ulster maybe, I don't know, 8 or 10 times.
But even like as a
player, more than a handful, obviously.
You wouldn't have had any trouble with refs at all?
Not really, but just one of those times was John, and he seems to recall me. It must have been one of my first times, and he seemed to remember very clearly that I hadn't a clue what I was doing. Look forward to hearing that story.
Yeah, I didn't have any I think I got one yellow card in my career.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty good. My brother...
No actually, one got yellow cards in your day.
I didn't even have them.
In the 70s.
It's the end of my career. My brother coaches his son's under-8s team, and he was coaching them yesterday, and they had a match, and he ended up being the referee for the match. And he's, while coaching him, he's trying to teach him. He's quite strong, but he's not very aggressive. Kind of probably like Jack, maybe. And he's trying to teach him how to become more aggressive. He's trying to teach him how to defend.
Uh-huh.
So yesterday they were playing the game. My brother was reffing, and Harry got the ball, and he went to carry, and Brian was like, "You push them away, Harry. Use the fend. Push them away, push them away." So Harry just goes up to the first kid, he just punches him straight in the face. And the other kid started crying. So Brian had to give a penalty against Harry for punching the face. Then it. Harry started crying because he's like, "You told me to do it." So I remember my dad as well used to referee our underage games when like the ref wouldn't show up. Uh-huh. My dad would be like, "I'll be the ref,"
And, is he your coach though? In
between? Yeah. So, and I knew he didn't really know the rules, so I'd be kind of.
Even this is mini rugby, even when you're like 10.
Under 12s. He just was kind of.
You're 11, you're like, dad doesn't know.
Oh, I'd be trying to teach him through the game, like how to ref it. And then he was such a piss taker. Like the start of the games, I was captain, I remember one time, and we had to toss the coin with the ref and the other captain. And my dad didn't want the other captain to know that I was his son. So he's like, hello, I am the referee. What's your name, young man? I was like, Barry Murphy. Oh, is your father Mickey Murphy? Yes. And then the other leg was like, do you know my father? And he's like, what's your name? He said, Cian Crowe. He's like, is your father Mr. Crowe? Yeah, he's like, oh, I know. So imagine the level of referees have gone up in the world, but let's find out.
It's funny you mentioned mentioned Jack, because we got to mini rugby for the first time in a few weeks there on Saturday, and we were doing this one-on-one drill. They shout the colour of the cone that you're standing on. You both run and get the ball, and Jack was opposite a girl called Tilly, and this girl was faster than Jack for a start. I think she's a bit older, to be fair. Oh. So Jack got there second, but made it count because he's got a bit of a ruthless streak in him, a very ungentlemanly streak.
What did he do?
She picked up the ball and he just ripped the ball off, ran up the other end. So it was kind of bittersweet. He's slow, but he's aggressive.
He's aggressive, okay. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So you got one of them anyway.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll get Johnny Lacey on the couch.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Welcome to the couch, Johnny Lacey. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, delighted to have you. So when you talk to most players after they retire, it's these weekends can be hard, apart from him, because he doesn't really care about not playing anymore. But a lot of players will be like, oh, I miss out on the big games like that. You miss those weekends. Mm. Do you find it that way when you're not reffing?
Yeah, I suppose when you've gone through it as a player, I suppose I thought I retired before, but I went straight into refereeing at a high level. So it become probably, I really just know what retirement is now, really. Do I miss going to Swansea on a Friday night with Pro 14? No.
No.
Do you miss Champions Cup games in Six Nations? Of course you do, because that's the real buzz. But there's certain Pro 14 matches you don't miss, but life goes on.
Yeah, and what about the weekend then? You're still switched on, though, for those games, like reviewing refs and everything?
Yeah. Obviously, because obviously Frank Murphy, former player as well, was on the line in Scotland yesterday, and Andy Brace reffed in Italy, France in previous rounds. So, yeah, one of our TMOs was involved in the 20s game on Friday night. And so we've a lot of Irish activity around refereeing and that. So, yeah, and then from a learning perspective, I would cut all the interesting clips. You've already spoken about one for our weekly or fortnightly high performance meetings, which will happen next week.
Okay.
So we'll review those and see what the learnings, so the referees can learn as well, just like players.
So what is it you missed since you finished? Because most players, whenever they finish, they miss the big wins or the team crack, whereas you wouldn't have had any experience of those. What is it you miss? Is it the lifestyle? Is it the big moments?
It's interesting that you say what I would consider a team win is going out and doing a good job in the match with a referee team. So they're actually a team now, I suppose, because you've got four officials that are all quite active. You know, they're not touch judges anymore. They're assistant referees. Yeah. The TMOs, as you're well aware, probably too much getting involved in the game for me. But yeah, you still have those, and you know, getting to ref in Murrayfield, 65,000 yesterday. Mm. You know, that buzz is hard to replicate in any walk of life. So it's pretty similar, really.
Yeah. Mm. Over the weekend, actually, I noticed there was quite a few, and I've seen this a lot, there's quite a few kind of cagey conversations between referees and assistant refs, because no one really wants to take responsibility for a decision that doesn't go right. So they all go, that's what I've seen, is that what you've seen? Yeah. Can you confirm? You know, and they're all just waiting to almost be overruled, or if I say, is that what you've seen? And then you say nothing. Then, well, you've agreed with me. So, do you know?
I agree.
So our relationship's kind of almost a little bit cagey in that, because no, there's never really that many good guys. What an amazing performance from the ref! Not that doesn't happen very often.
No,
it's way more often someone's made a mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get the either do your job or you do a bad job.
Yeah, and if you go into a stadium with 65,000, the best you're going to get, like straight away. And I took a while to get used to that. you know, you when you're part of a team and you do well, there's a love from your teammates and your fans and all that. The best you can hope for as a ref that one crowd are not going to like you from one team and the other, oh, he wasn't too bad today.
That's
the best. And you know, you gotta learn to deal with that over and just go and worry about your performance.
They should segment off a little bit of the stadium for a referee supporter.
Exactly, great idea. Yeah. Actually, funny, like my parents have never seen me referee a match live.
Really?
You know, they were going to go to the World Cup in 2015, ended up doing the bronze medal match, great, they were going to fly over. I said, don't. I said, you know, they love sport, but I just don't want to put them in that environment with the abuse that they're probably going to hear. I don't think, my dad would probably get stuck in someone. He was a tough GA man back in the day, so I don't see a 75-year-old man stuck in
someone. My mother used to announce that she, when she got to her seat, I'm Barry Murphy's mother. And then she told me that. I was like, how bad are people giving out about me in the stadium around you?
But absolute silence round her. With the oven in the room.
True. But when you're being put together as a referee team, are they conscious of keeping lads together all the time and building that team amongst the 4 or 5 E?
In Pro 14, yes. One of the nice things about Pro 14 now is that when I started Pro 14, you flew to Cardiff, drove on your own, ref 7:30 at night, pissing rain, and then drive back to London on your own. So that's, you know, you could have a bad game, a good game, but get into a car at 11 o'clock at night in Clonetley and drive to London on your own.
Your own, in your head.
Yeah, you can stay, but you're trying to get home, you know, to family and friends, and that's quite difficult. But now the TMO and one assistant referee goes with an Irish referee, so at least the TMO can drive and it's a bit of a team environment, and the more investment with Pro 14 that's come, that's probably, and the referees are all full-time now, per se, so, bar one or two. So that's helped, you know. Europe, you go as a full team.
Yeah.
And there's a bit of crack in that.
Yeah.
You know, you go down to Toulon and you ref Toulon Saracens. Hopefully the game goes well, and then you have a nice bottle of wine and a steak down in the
Is there
Toulon.
A team bus? Is there like songs in the bus, initiations?
Good crack, there would be a bit of banter and good chats along the way. And, you know, some of the places are, with flights nowadays, you know, there's a summer schedule and a winter, so you might have to fly to Toulouse to drive 2 hours to Biarritz, or back in the day, or wherever, or Clermont's, you know, quite difficult. So you fly to Lyon and it's a 2 hour drive to Clermont. My favorite place to referee, actually.
Yeah.
An amazing place.
That's,
and I'm sure you're
clear.
It's insane. Incredible. You go out to warm up there 45 minutes before and it's 18,000 people ready to go. Actually, ref my last game in France there, which was a semi-final of the European Challenge Cup, and went in an almighty session afterwards with the fans. They have an amazing post-match experience in there, and they have that old cowbell. So there's an 80-year-old guy that rings this bell. He's actually very, very ill at the moment, and he rings this bell and it drives. So he was inside there, so I started ringing the bell, and we were drinking shots with Frank Murphy and Andy Brace. It was good fun, and ringing the bell, sure, they were going crazy.
Brilliant.
Good fun.
Yeah. What about a place like that, like Marcel Michelin? Is that bittersweet to you because it's such an amazing experience, such a unique place to play? But also, if things don't go well for Clermont, you get a way harder time. And French supporters and French players are probably the most irrational in the game.
Yeah.
Your man, what do you call the tight head that got sent off at the weekend? Punch your man in the head, got red card, obviously, and he's walking off shaking his head. As if the refs made a mistake.
Yeah, no, it's a cauldron. But I think it's just like a player, that lifts up your edge and gets you even sharper for a game down there. Yeah, and you've got to be comfortable with making tough decisions against Clermont, knowing that 18,000 people are going to be whistling and on your back. Mm. You send a yellow or red card off of one of those, and I was working with Tonga during the World Cup this year and met the team, and Tonga beat Italy their first Tier 1 win a few years ago, and I reffed it. So team manager welcomed me back, but I could see the number 8 for Cast, who I sent off this year for a shoulder charge into Luke Cowan-Dickie against Exeter. So they welcomed me in, and all I could see was like Maffa was over there going, "Jeez, I sent him off this year. This is going to be interesting, you know." But he came over to me and had a bit of crack. He nearly got sent off when he came back after his 3-week ban for the same thing. So, yeah, it's interesting. But send a guy off in Cast, which, as you know, is one of the toughest places to go and play away from home, and a tough place for a ref as well.
Mm. Mm. Is that a lonely place to be when you're a ref? I always picture it. Like you're in the middle of it and it's going wrong, or you have to make a big call like that. and the abuse you can get, it must be a lonely place. Like, are you encouraged to practice meditation or any kind of mental health skills or anything like that?
Yeah, well, we've got all the supports from the IRFU, to be fair. You know, S&C full-time, sports psychologists full-time. So we've access to everything that players get, which is fantastic. But, like, nothing prepares you for that in that moment. I suppose, you know, you can talk to a player or a referee, but when your experience really helps, you know, and being strong in that moment. But, you know, curveballs come at you. I mean, look at the Marler incidents at the weekend. If that came at you, that's not something that any of us were expecting to see at the weekend, but a referee might have to deal with that in front of millions of people instantly. And that's the one which separates the top-class international referees to guys that maybe don't make it, is to be able to deal with those curveballs that come at you and deal with them well. Now, we role-play stuff when we look at clips in the High Performance Centre every couple of weeks, and how would you describe that? How would you deal with that decision? So we prepare in that way, but when you've got 20,000 people in the Michelin and you've got 20 seconds to make a decision on something, that's not easy for one person.
Would you have known that rule at the weekend if that was, if you were ref and that was, your attention was drawn to it, like, that he did that and you saw it on the screen, would you be able to say, oh, that's a red card offence?
He broke the rule.
Well, rules, I know you're trying to wind me up here with the rules because Paul O'Connell keeps calling them the rules, but they're actually laws in the game because you and I might have different interpretations of, is that offside, is it not, is it 50-50, do we play on? Because we can have a rugby match with 55 penalties and we'll never see a rugby match and people won't come. So it's getting that balance right, the decisions that influence a game that should be penalised and letting the game flow. So again, the better the referee, the better the flow of the game, and I think that's very important. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you know, I know Joe Marler a long time. I actually defended him in a sighting in 2010 in the Under-20 World Cup. I did the opening game and he was incorrectly cited for a headbutt, which he didn't do. So I was asked to go to the hearing, which is quite unusual for a ref to be brought into a hearing, but because it was a tournament and we didn't know each other, and obviously the prosecution asked me, did he do it? And I said no, and they kept probing me, and I stuck to my guns, and he quite rightly was, the sighting was cleared, and myself and Joe ever since have been, he appreciated, he was had a Mohican back then, playing away to Argentina down in Rosario, I'll never forget it, with 30,000 people booing the English national anthem because of the Falklands War. It was amazing. But really, really funny guy. You mentioned him earlier on. You know, even refereeing him over the last 10 years, every year a couple of times, he'd walk in this worst Irish accent ever into a change room, all professional, serious, and top of the morning to you, he'd say, and everyone would start laughing in Quinns or England or whatever. But yeah, it's a sticky one. I think World Rugby are going to have to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Obviously, there's a range of, you know, suspensions you can get from 12 weeks up to 208 weeks. Which is 4 year suspension, but I don't think that's for the most serious offence where someone would be injured. But
so the lowest is 8 weeks?
12.
12.
12, yeah.
So they're going to have to do something, obviously, with the, I think, with the outrage and...
I think so for the integrity of the game, possibly, and we don't, as you mentioned earlier on, that this, we don't look back at this incident. We need to look at this incident, in my view, and say, right, we need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And you know, these people are role models, right down to Jack playing rugby in Ulster, Mick playing, you know, that's who this is for, really, you know, at the end of the day. And I think that's important as well.
It is, Would it have been considered different if Alwyn Jones had reacted differently? If he'd laughed, and then if he was asked about it in the press conference afterwards, and he said, "Ah, listen, it's just one of those things. Joe was just having a bit of cry."
Yeah, I still think the discussion would probably have to be had. But I find it interesting that Alwyn Jones didn't bring it up to the referee's attention, but still in the post-match interview, he brought up the referee and threw the referee under the bus in the TMO, and I'm like going, well, you didn't go to the referee and actually put your case forward to the referee live in the match.
The referee won't listen to
you. I mean, there was so much going on there. It's very difficult for the assistant referee and TMO to pick up that quickly, because you go down that road and it has a serious impact unless you're 100% sure.
Yeah, and but surely the TMO has all the footage that most viewers at home saw it.
Yeah.
So he's a professional and that's his job to see it, surely.
Yeah, well, I suppose,
And then the other thing Alwyn said was, it's difficult to know when the right time is to go to the referee, because you know what it's like. Sometimes you're reviewing and they're sitting talking to their AR and they're looking at the screen talking to the TMO, and any player that comes over, they go, no, not now.
Yeah. But I think even before it, there was nothing being reviewed in that moment anyway. Yeah. So I think there was an opportunity, if you really felt that strongly about it, that he could have brought it to the attention of the referee, and then it might have been a different conversation. Mm. I mean, the TMO is looking at that. And can he say 100% in 3 or 4 seconds, did he grab him in the genitalia, or did he just grab the shorts and pull the shorts? How can he be 100% sure? Yeah, because if Alwyn Jones turned after, he just pulled my shorts, and then we've had a red card, and it influenced the outcome of the game. Mm-hmm. So, and I think there's a responsibility on Joe as well not to bring that type of attention onto himself. So let's not look at the refs too much, and I'm not here defending them, but let's look at the player that has to take responsibility for his own actions as well, I think.
Yeah,
the English, they're kind of walking on thin ice all the time, or on the edge. They're, you know, a lot of people question how they were offside a lot at the weekend. They're pulling and dragging. There's a lot of high shots going in. So I suppose if you're a Welsh player, you're probably going in there going, any opportunity I can get to get an advantage. So Alwyn Jones probably, like, he wasn't having a go off Joe Marler as a character. He said he's a really good guy, but he should have been penalised for that, and Wales should have gotten an advantage from it. So
it seems Joe Marler was doing one of two things. He wasn't trying to cause physical harm. He was either trying to get a reaction to get him to punch him.
Or he was just having a bit of crack.
Or
as
he literally does. And knowing the character that he is, you'd be fairly certain that he was just having a bit of crack.
Yeah,
and I would imagine he probably has a relationship with Alan Wynn. He seems like sort of fella who he might have thought would have reacted by smiling or laughing, and then it could have helped the situation. I'm just saying, hypothetically, it could have diffused the situation completely. And what was a real intense kind of scuffle, head-to-head, shirt grabbing, and then just everyone just says, right, like, come on.
I think he was just trying to have the crack. Genuine, that's my own opinion. He needs to be more careful, yes. But I think he was even looking at the cameras. Uh-huh. If you look at the footage, he's kind of looking over to one side going, let's have the crack here, lads, you know what I mean? Let's look at the camera. But as I said,
and his facials were...
Yeah,
They added to the whole thing.
yeah, for sure.
But it's not something we want to encourage, but I think in 5 years, like, if that became something, or like there was a spate of these, then you're saying, right, this needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
But for what it was there and then, it didn't seem that serious. And my initial reaction was I thought it was funny. Obviously, since then, there's been a lot of discussion around it, and then it does become, right, there needs to be a conversation had around this. But my initial reaction, I would imagine if most people are honest, their reactions were probably the same. A bit of a giggle.
And the discussion is good, Dreamy, because professional referees around the world will have discussions around that and will be strong in what way they will deal with that. And I'm sure World Rugby will give direction to all of us, players, coaches and referees, because we're all in this together. We're all part of the same game. So I think we'll get some direction on that, and referees will be instructed that if they come across any of this, they'll be.
What is the actual rule, John? Is it grabbing or twisting? Is that the rule?
Yeah, grabbing, twisting. That's what the law states in the law book. So I mean, it's there for people to read online. It's available on the World Rugby app. You can look at, you know, but it is, and it's not common. It doesn't. No. I've never come across it in 10 years. I was professional refereeing, so you know, I've got guys that have had pinches and bites and gouges, allegations, but never come across my desk in my career. So, so let's make sure we keep it out.
Yeah. Speaking of that, the other controversial moment of the weekend was Mohamed Hawass getting red carded for France at the weekend. It's Pat, you were just pointing out beforehand that Ibanez has come out and said that Hawass is claiming that he was gouged.
Yeah, just before that by Nick Haining, he said that. So they're obviously contesting it then and saying that, you know, he was provoked, or even then that he wasn't properly sighted as well. Like, his vision could have been blurred if he was. Right. So they're not giving it up anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a reasonably accurate punch for someone with blurred vision.
It was.
And poor Richie, Jimmy Richie, he got smashed by Fiku.
he got punched by the tight head, and then Fakatau was kind of slapping him at the same time. He got all three in one.
But yeah. I think he contributed to the whole team kicking off as well. For me, if I'm being honest, I probably, you know, would have binned him, and a red card is a red card for the punch and retaliation. So, yeah, I think there's a couple of things in that match that, you know, will have different interpretations. Mm-hmm. If there is a gouge, as you know, as alleged, the footage will have to be there for that, and the sighting, like, there's 16 camera angles in a ground now at a test match like that. So, and they've got Hawkeye, which can zoom in on anything. So not too much stuff is missed when you've got 16 cameras around the field with three technicians with the ability to zoom stuff and everything. So it's why rugby, we don't have that many punches anymore. I mean, when was the last time we saw a punch land? Maybe in Tolman Park 2 weeks ago with the Tongan second row, actually, come to think of it. We haven't had a lot of punches. There's a lot of pull and dragging going on.
At under-21s, I remember we were playing in Wales. We got beat badly by Wales under-21s at the time. Chris Henry, out of nowhere, there was a maul, and there was no scuffle or nothing, no fight or nothing. And then just all of a sudden, Chris Henry got a red card for a gouge. And it turned out they just got the wrong person. Chris got red carded for nothing. And he wasn't even in the mall. He wasn't even in the shot. Chris was like nearly in tears running off the pitch.
Oh, it's tough, yeah.
But probably one camera at that. That was at the Knoll, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Back then.
Lovely place.
Old school.
Old school. That's old school.
Like. That was a lonely drive home from Chris.
Yeah, for sure.
As you said, there were controversial moments in that game. Like the first yellow card that France had as well. For me, I don't know, when you talk about keeping the game, speeding the game up and keeping it going and keeping it moving, keeping everyone interested, that took, how long did that take to make that decision? 3 or 4 minutes probably.
Yeah.
And early in the game, like as Paulie said on TV, that in real time, that just happened so quickly. And two players go in and it all happened so low to the ground as well. It's not like someone was lift above head height or dropped around. It just happened so quickly. I just feel like give the penalty and move on, right?
Yeah, I'm in that camp, Barry. We're working hard, the Irish refs and Pro 14, to try and make stronger on-field decisions, because we forget that people, we get to go to most games free, whether it's our job or TV or commentary. But like, these people are paying to go in to watch rugby matches, and we're lucky to have them. And the referees need to speed up the game. We don't want to spend 5 minutes looking, what do you think, what do you think? Mm. Make quicker decisions, because it's killing the flow of a game, killing the atmosphere at matches. I can hear supporters, get on with it, ref, make a decision, ref. Let's speed up these decisions. I'm not saying with the really, really tight calls that we don't take the time to make sure that it's a try or make sure that punch is actually connected. It's not just hit a shoulder. But I'm talking about the ones that are easy. You know, the ones in, you know, the Tolman Park red card, the French one, you know, that tip tackle for me, that was just give a strong, quick penalty and get on with the game, because I felt that game was pretty, the first half of that game was really poor yesterday. I didn't really enjoy the first half of that game. It was just, the scrums were taking too long for me, and you know, there was a lot of stuff on social media about that. I think we need to speed up the downtime, because it'll enhance the atmosphere and the intensity of a rugby match. Mm. And the referee should contribute to that by making strong on-field decisions with his team and make the process quicker.
Mm. I think the TMO could help out a little bit. Quite often the ref takes his time, blows his whistle, has a chat to his AR, and then he does the signal that he's going to go upstairs, and then he talks to him. And like that probably takes 10, 15 seconds before he even talks to the TMO.
Mm.
Then the TMO says, okay, I'm reviewing the footage now, and the footage will be up on the screen shortly.
Mm.
If something's happened, most people in the stadium know what he's referring to. They might not know exactly what it is, so that's why they're going to review it. Mm. But there's been an incident there. TMO should look straight to it. And if the ref says, I want to have a conversation about this, TMO should say, I've already had a look at it there. Here's what I think. And it's up on the screen straight away. I feel like that there's always a delay over that.
Yeah, I'll give you an insight into what I would do myself. So sometimes foul play has to be decided by the referee, not the TMO. That's the first thing, that referee leads foul play and on-field decisions, especially on foul play. He can give advice and grounding. So if you guys were my assistant referees, we two good guys to have, actually.
Very reliable.
Very, very, very reliable. Honest, straight. No, but what I would normally do, so if I have a tip tackle in an Ulster game against Munster, for example, and I've seen it myself, I'm pretty sure I know what I'm going to do, but I would walk over to you, Andrew, and just say, I'm going to review a tip tackle here just to see landing position. Uh-huh. That takes about 8 or 9 seconds.
Could you run over?
Yeah. But what I'm doing is I'm just giving my TMO 10 seconds to get me the actual best shot. Uh-huh. That gives him that 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So when I go up to Ravenhill and say, put it on the wonderful, excellent screens in Ulster, actually, as you're aware, they're huge, that TMO will have that ready for me. I want to see tip tackle by Barry Murphy. And that will come straight up, and then I'll make that quick decision. So what I don't want to see is asking the other touch judge, let's show me another angle. What started that? Is there any mitigating factors? I want to cut out all this stuff and get that. So there's a reason why sometimes that 8 or 10 seconds, I don't think that's the problem. Uh-huh. It's the 2 minutes of talking not necessary bullshit. Mm. Sorry, that's a poor choice of word for a ref, but I mean, let's get rid of the bullshit and make quicker decisions.
Yeah.
So that's probably the reason.
No, spot
why we
on.
Take a little bit of time on that.
Yeah. Our players, like Frank Murphy's obviously come through the ranks very quickly. He was identified then whenever he finished. He must have showed a bit of interest whenever he finished playing. And then with someone like that, are they actively pursuing retired players who have an interest in the game, who want to get into that, to kind of fast-track the game because they've got that experience in that environment?
We've three of us that are kind of run the department. Dudley Phillips, head of referees, and I look after the high-performance referee and the talent ID side. And then we've David Wilkinson, head of community rugby, which is in charge of the AIL. So we've pathways coming from guys that don't play, which is fine, and we just want the best referees that we can for the game. And the professional game is another. Professional people retiring is another avenue that I'll be looking into, and I'll be actively talking to guys that don't come through academies. So because Irish refereeing is now professional, we have 5 fully professional referees. It's a professional opportunity. If a guy doesn't make it as a rugby player, or Barry, you had an injury, maybe if you retired at 26, 27, you wanted to be a professional athlete, that refereeing is now an option. But you still have to go through the All-Ireland League system, go through the Ulster Society of Referees, and come through the ranks like everybody else. And it's just like playing for me. The best guys get there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
In every sense. You know that. You know that people will always think that they're better than what they are and compare themselves to other people. Referees are no different. Mm. But so I suppose myself, Joy Neville, number 8 Grand Slam. Mm-hmm. Andy Brace played for Old Crescent and played for Belgium international team, actually.
All right.
And I watched, they played Spain yesterday. I watched that game yesterday because we had an Irish refereeing that, Sean Gallagher. Obviously, you mentioned Frank. And obviously George Clancy is a very experienced referee. So there are 5 guys at the moment. But I hope through both systems that we will get, Ulster haven't had an international referee for 20 years. So I'm talking to Kieran Campbell, guys like that. Leo Cullen wants to get an ex-player into refereeing as well. So because the pro refs are helping the teams as well. We're out doing pitch sessions, as you're probably aware. Mm. I've been doing Munster for a few years. But we're going around the 4 provinces, and those pro refs during the week are going to the training sessions to help the players.
When you trained with Munster, that wasn't really a thing when I was playing. Is that every week you're in with them for 2 sessions a week? Every pitch session is referee, basically?
I was until retirement. So we've a mixture of people going into Munster now. I help out. So if the pro refs are going to Ulster, Leinster and Connacht on a week, and I look after Munster then or whatever. But, Joy goes in, George goes in. Mm. Obviously, Andy Brace and I'm a ref in them. So we keep them away. They go to Leinster and Ulster, and we kind of make sure that we cover the teams when they need the sessions. Like I do a little bit with the Irish under-20s at the moment. They're a really enjoyable group to work with. Mm-hmm. So Noel McNamara brings me in there and, around the laws. Because, interestingly enough, you've got a very good captain in David McCann from Ulster, who's hopefully going to be a professional rugby player. But he'd never dealt with a TMO before. So he goes into the Six Nations. So I had to give him the TMO protocol, and that was his homework for 1 weekend. And then he would come into training and I'd ask him different questions and how are you going to ask the ref that and all that. Because that type of stuff, people don't realise that these boys are learning
the lingo,
the terminology. And they've gone through their schools programmes or their clubs, but they never had a TMO before. So that education is a part of that 20s programme as well for them going forward. So anything we can do to help them is a pleasure for us.
And I know you, like, obviously you live across the road from Paul O'Connell. I'd imagine he must have been all over you, like, when he was playing, about learning the lingo, or, you know, he's so obsessed and so dedicated. Like, what was that like?
Yeah, dedicated.
Every night of the week.
I suppose for a guy that played in the backs, and then for me to spend, when Anthony Foley asked me to come in, because Munster had discipline problems, so come in, I spent all my time with the forwards. Now I don't like the backs anymore. I just love being with the forwards all the time, because it's more interesting stuff that goes on there, maul, scrummaging, and the competitiveness of training, and the edge with two packs going at each other at scrum time, even from Ireland all the way down to provinces. But Paulie was brilliant for me as well, because I was able to bounce maul stuff off him. So it was a two-way flow, but... yeah, Paulie wanted to know all the terminology as well for referees. So when he went to challenge a referee, he was able to have the terminology. So tip tackle, for example, taken above horizontal, driven into the ground, Paulie would know all those phrases. So he could challenge a referee, or...
He could trick them.
Or defend in another way, that he's come down safely or he's come on his side. So Paulie knew all that stuff. And I remember Jerome Garces made a mistake one time, and... there was the Munster wanted a maul, of course, but it was Leicester, decided not to engage the maul, which is a thing referees hate.
Yeah.
So Paul had the ball and he went to keep moving. It's a nothing, it's just a team going forward. And Jerome Garces gave a free kick for obstruction. But the ball was at the front, so it should have been play on. So he made a mistake, and Paul, he said, how am I going to make sure this doesn't happen again? I said, make eye contact with the referee and say ball's at the front, because then it's legal.
Yeah.
So, of course, Champions Cup game next week, same thing happens. Team C that Munster got caught, and Paulie's just looking at the ref. I have it at the front. So that's the detail that he went to. He used to call in as well into the house and take furniture down and put it on the floor and make rucks and stuff like that, and put on the kettle, and we'd have good chats. But I enjoy our chats, because he challenges me and I challenge back the same way. But yeah. And that's healthy, because... that's the best learning environment for everybody.
Yeah. So, you didn't plan on becoming a referee, did you? Like, it kind of, you did it happen accidentally when you got your first schools cup match? Was it?
Yeah, it literally was by accident, which happens referees as well, especially the ex players ones. Happened to Alain Roland as well. He just turned up in Blackrock. But as you know, I was in the academy and the age grade squads of Munster, and I was a rugby development officer, and obviously with Munster at the same time, and went to watch some of my players in an under-17 medallion cup, junior cup we call it in the south, and went to watch a game, and the ref didn't turn up. 1,500 people, so the branch didn't want to give back the money, so I got the shepherd's hook in to ref the match, and there's a picture put up in the Examiner when it should have been more about the players. They put a picture of me up refing the match, and then the RFU just came, would you be interested? So I was actually due to go into the academy full-time, and they said, look, we'll give you support for 2 years and a part-time contract. And I said, right, you can always go back to coaching. And that's 11 years ago.
Mm.
So it happened for a reason, you know, and you enjoy it. And the one thing I will say, coaching's tough.
Yeah.
Refereeing is tough, but it keeps you connected to the game. You know, not everybody can be in the media now. Every player coming out seems to want to go into the media. It's pretty brave to become a ref, or pretty brave to become a full-time professional coach, because they're pretty ruthless jobs now with social media and stuff. So I admire anybody that takes it on, you know?
Yeah, I suppose you played in the AIL, the heart of the AIL, winning five AILs with Shannon.
Mm.
He was the first ever player to score 50 tries in the AIL.
Congratulations.
What an achievement. It's good to see the AIL coming back, because it went a bit of a lull, but I've seen a few games this year, and it's I think with the change and putting more professional players back into it, it's really, really stepped up the level of the rugby matches that I've seen. You know, I went to see Andy Brace play, you know, UCD, Young Munsters, and you know, I would have known a lot of the Irish under-20s from last year, but there was six or seven of them playing for UCD, and good few of the Munster academy lads playing for Munster. So that's good to see that. You know, I know Scotland are talking about going their Super Six. We're putting all their pro players into a kind of a league like that. But I think we've got a good quality product in the AIL, and good referees reffing it as well. So I think the more pro players that are playing in that, with the standard going up, and then that helps the refs, because it's an opportunity for our coaches to develop, but also the referees. There's a huge jump, lads,
really,
to go to Pro 14 from AIL for a player and for a referee. So that B&I Cup went, and then they had a kind of a Celtic Cup this year. So that's between Ireland and Wales at the moment. So 8 weeks. So that's the only real opportunity that refs can get to get better, to go a level up from AIL to professional rugby, because the jump there is tough.
Yeah.
Tough. And as you know, you get a first cap for Munster, Ulster, Leinster, Connacht, whatever it may be, and you have a tough day at the office with social media. It's hard to come back.
I do remember you telling me that if you can ref AIL, or if you can touch judge AIL in Limerick. If you can ref in Limerick and get away with it, you can ref anywhere in the world.
People ask, because we have five professional referees, and hopefully we'll have more from the other provinces in the years to come. That's the goal, and that's what we want to do. But four of the five are from Munster at the moment, one from Cork, three from Limerick, and one from Dublin. So people ask me, why? I said, well, if you can ref in Limerick, you can ref anywhere in the world. I have refed all over the world, and I mean all over the world. And
they come out of Limerick as referees. Wiry Sexton, was he the president of the
He's
the president of the Referees Association.
Yeah.
This guy would have refed us all the way up. Absolute character. And he just has such banter with the players, and games are a roller coaster. Like, he'd be kind of favouring one team for 1 minute and the other. My dad
would talk to the crowd as well, just entertain them and tell them what the penalties were for. But he actually he refereed me when I was playing. And from my own club, Clanwilliam, I can remember him. And he nearly educated you as well, because we didn't know the rules / laws. No, but we didn't know, but because, you know, our coaches weren't as au fait as people are with the laws nowadays, because because we, like when I was playing and reffing, there wasn't that many games on TV. Now we're saturated.
That's it, yeah.
So, so when you start out as a referee, when I was starting out in 2008, I did my first professional game, maybe three games were televised, but they put you out in the non-televised ones. So if you made a balls of it, you were hidden a little bit from the public. Yeah, and then the referee assessors and fans might have seen that you had a poor game, but you were protected a little bit, so... And then you'd get a TV game after a couple of games where you're exposed. Mm-hmm. But now your first Pro 14 game, you're exposed because all seven are televised.
Mm. Wow.
So you have a car crash in that one, and it's hard to come back. Where a player has a car crash, he gets the arm around him, you'll be all right, you'll get backed, you'll get support from your teammates.
Not always.
not always, but I think they'll probably get more of a chance with the public that he's a young guy and...
The abuse that refs get on social media must be hard. Like, none of them, I think Nigel Owens is on social media.
Very few.
Probably one of the only ones, is he?
Yeah.
That's hard. Like, and I know players get it as well, but no one gets worse than a referee.
I think players usen get it. Referees are going to get it in the neck. I think that comes with the territory. It's just how vicious some of it can be. It can be tough. I mean, it's hard to stay away from it or not read it or not see it sometimes, because it's everywhere.
Mm. How did you deal with that? Like, would you?
I made a conscious decision not to be on social media, as a lot of referees probably do now. But I remember talking to George North there about two or three seasons ago, where he had a bad game and he got absolutely slated by his own fans. And I was like going, he said, how do you deal with that? I said, I'm not on it. You know, but I know guys are trying to promote themselves and stuff like that, but I just noticed in the last couple of years, players are beginning to get it now.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches are getting it after, you know, a couple of matches. They're under pressure. Get rid of the coach, do this, do that. I mean, I see some of the stuff that came out about Joe after you know, the World Cup, and I was like, that's really harsh for one of the most successful coaches. And I worked with the Irish team for a couple of years, and... You know, one of the best coaches we've ever had. You know what I mean? So it's just like a just turn on people quickly. So
and
it's
like, anonymous people just sitting at home, just send out tweets, just send out abuse, and not giving it a second thought, not actually thinking this person is going to get this and it's going to have an impact on how they're feeling, you know, with their day, and it's genuinely going
to. There's a lack of humour in it nowadays. Like when that used to be the hurler in the ditch, I don't know. It was fine because it was there, it was in front of you, there was people around, there was repercussions. So, but when you're sitting at home and you're tweeting or you're just being vicious, like YouTube is a cesspit for it. Like people are just on there, like anonymous, just being fucking mean and horrible. Mm. Like, and it's, you're better off to just avoid it. Like, because actually at the weekend, and I was in a pub and they were like, I love your show. And some guy was like, you remember a few weeks ago on YouTube, some fellow was commenting underneath and he was abusing you over this? And I was like, no. I didn't.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, I don't, I said, man, I don't have that in my, I don't want that in my world. Like, why? And he was like, sorry, I thought you'd read that stuff. And but now that it's in my head, I'm like, what was the person saying?
Did you go and look?
No, I didn't. And I won't. Because, like, I was oblivious and blissfully oblivious beforehand.
But most of our penguins are lovely.
They are lovely, to be fair. Oh, they were
They're so cuddly
sad.
And cute.
But you have your professional side in that. You know, I suppose I was renowned for quite serious looking when I refereed, but it's not me. You'd know me well. You'd know me kind of well, Andrew. But I'm not that serious in real life, but people have a perception of you just because they see you on television. First of all, they say, geez, you're a lot taller than I thought, because the guys I'm talking to are 6'10" sometimes, and I'm looking up at them, and then you walk into the local and an old guy says to me, geez, you're a lot taller than I thought you were, you know what I mean? Because people just think you're something else, you know, and you get to know people, they, geez, I didn't realise that this, and this. So, and I think most of the people that are quite vicious on Twitter are people that never pay to go to a rugby match, never go down to the local clubs in Ulster or wherever and pick up and coach a team or help out or drive a car. So I think those type of people in rugby are not the type of people that are doing that type of stuff. So maybe I'd like to see them get down to a local club and give a handout. Maybe they mightn't put so much nasty stuff on Twitter every weekend.
A little bit like what we were talking about with Joe Martyr. I think you said earlier on that he has said that rugby didn't allow him to be himself
that much. So I think that happens quite a lot in all areas of the game. Referees probably even more so because you have to take yourself seriously. You have to be able to articulate yourself correctly, make correct calls. Don't make a mistake. It's your profession. And obviously players, it's your profession. Like most people, your profession is your job, and everybody knows you're a slightly more straight version of your real self when you're at your job. Only our job is when we're on TV and it's our public profile.
Absolutely.
So people don't really get to know the real you until you know, you actually spend time.
Yeah, it's interesting. People ask me a lot about captains, you know, good ones, bad ones. A good story about you in a minute, actually. I think one of your first
times. I think that's all
captain.
We've got time for.
No, but guys like Rory Best, Sam Warburton.
The bad captains we're talking about.
Brilliant. Right? And do you know why they were so brilliant? It was the guys that talk too much and come at you too hard, never really. There's only a certain amount of that traction you can take.
Okay.
Sam Warburton would just come and say one comment and he'd be gone because he's too busy doing his job. Kieran Reid, the same. Ref these guys. Rory, brilliant captain to deal with, would come with accurate, simple stuff and would be gone. His point to be well made, and you just got to know these captains over the years that if it was an offside or marginally offside, I remember Warburton said, coaches are telling me that, you know, offsides are, they're pushing it. And just from experience of dealing with him, he never bullshitted me. It was always straight and honest. So I took that comment and told my ARs, lads, let's make sure our offsides for both sides. I would always say, you know, for both sides. So I always found the better the player, the better the captain. And I think that's why they end up in those roles. And, you know, not that we're coming to you or anything like that, but I remember, I think it was in Raven Hill. And it was always awkward when a winger or a fullback was captain because they're so far away from some of the stuff that's in the coal face sometimes.
Yeah.
And they're coming. I'm like, what the hell is he going to come with? He was 50 yards away when this happened. Do you know what I mean? But you came to me and you just looked at me and I just looked back at you and I was like, I was comfortable. I said, this could, have you something for me? And everything okay? It was just like, we had that good chat there. Go back to the wing. So it was like,
This is what I'm supposed to do.
I understood why, because like you'd see captains coming up all the time. So I got to do that as well. But you didn't come with anything.
So I ran all the way in from the wing and then I was like, never mind.
I'll
come back to my wing now.
Dylan Hartley's another one, you know, in the persona of him is people don't like him, but brilliant captain. Good guy to deal with. I found him, good to deal with.
Yeah, he's a great pundit as well.
With England, articulate, smart, you know, people, you know, just. Obviously, he's been involved in incidents he shouldn't have got involved in, and that's fine. But I'm only saying, as a captain to deal with on field.
Well, I suppose
field,
lads
excellent.
That have been captains since they were under 10s, you know what I mean? Those kind of fellas, like the guys you're listing there, I would assume they've been captains since they were young fellas. So they've grown with it. The experience is there. And that's got to be so important. It's going to be first thing. And like when you look at Johnny now, there's a lot of questions over whether has he been captain, like, you know, all the way up, or
for Leinster.
Don't think so. No.
Yeah,
no.
He's found himself in a tough position now, isn't he? Because he's the only one for the job. You can imagine, like, because he's probably the most experienced player. He deserves it. He wants it. And as Raj said the other day, though, is he the right person for the job is the other question. Yeah. I think it's not to make it personal. I think he may have taken it a bit personal, what Raj said, like, but it's...
I thought he was very good the last day, for instance, but I mean, it's like anything. If you're doing it for the first time, whether it's you're reffing or you're commentating on a match, you're going to get better with more games that you do and more experience. So I think that's a factor. You know what I mean? He hasn't done it maybe through his career a lot, and maybe... I certainly saw a difference in the last Irish game compared to the first one, and I thought he dealt with the referee really well in that game, I have to say.
The thing with Johnny, though, I think he'll always pick up stuff. I think he'll always have a conversation where he knows what's happened, and he's very, very clear, and he's got a great appreciation of what has gone on.
Yeah.
He will not... I don't think he'll bluff. I don't think he'll come in blindly and have an argument. I think he'll say, this is what I saw, and this is what happened, and this is what you said. So I think... I think he could potentially hold referees to account. Who was the ref at Twickenham?
Jakob Piper.
Yeah. And I think Johnny kind of caught him out.
And he knows the law. He knows every single law inside out. So he knows his stuff, obviously. But, I mean, he's able to articulate that because he's pretty accurate in what he says most of the time.
I think he caught Piper out, actually. He caught him out. He said, I think we talked about this in a previous episode, Bundy, what was the issue there? And his reasoning for it at the time was different to when he had the conversation a few minutes later at the end of the play.
Yeah, right,
so I feel like Johnny, like not that many other people, would be able to point that out. And, you know, he keeps him accountable in that way.
I thought he was excellent in that game. And I suppose it's the timing of the challenges and your input to a professional referee is critical. And that's where the 20s boys at the moment, there's a leadership group there. They're learning to when to push, when not to push. And then you have to know your TMO protocol. You need to know your law. And it's tough for a captain because he's all other stuff going on. He's got to play his position, think about the law. When can I challenge the referee? When is time to push? When is time to lay off him? You know, it takes a bit of experience to do that. Mm-hmm. You know,
and
referees do it as well. We know when to push as well.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, you go to a captain and you say, look, can you have a change behavior here? But then now I'm telling you. Next penalty down here, someone will go. Do you know what I mean? So there's a different way of getting captains to work with you, and then, right, that's enough. Now I'm drawing a line in the sand. Next one leaves the field.
I think Stuart Hogg looks like he's learning it at the minute, very much so. I think he looks like he's quite aware and quite conscious of how he's approaching the ref, what he's saying.
It's true, Andrew, yeah. And then if you think where he's coming from, uh-huh. He sprints down, so he already looks aggressive.
Because
he's running 30 metres before the game restarts, because he wants to say something.
The ref's grimacing.
I'm looking at Stuart Hogg coming sprinting from 30 metres, and I'm already thinking, what the hell does he want? Coming from 30 metres away here, and I'm kind of going, let him make his point, but if he comes aggressively because he's run down, then, okay, we'll draw the line there.
Okay. The communication between the refs, you said it a minute ago, you're very serious, but it was that very conscious decision for you to be, you know, you see a lot of refs that are kind of chatty and have a bit of crack with players, and is that something that might need to kind of drift out of the game, or like being characters, the refs, you know, like Nigel Owens is such a character, the use of first names and stuff like that, is that a...
Yeah,
is that a weird territory or what?
I think coming from a player background, where referees are, in my view, talking a little bit too much, especially around a breakdown. I've no problem with, you know, a bit of interaction, a bit of banter, but we're there to referee the game, not to talk people off penalties that are actually influencing a game. So, you know, you're off your feet there, you're holding on to the ball. Should we just not penalise these? And I'm not saying we penalise at every breakdown, because preventative refereeing helps. So if it's a 50-50 and a guy, you feel is off your feet, you feel you're on it, Andrew, I'll just let you know rather than penalise you. It might be a harsh penalty, so leave it, you leave it, we get on, we have a flow to the game. But I just think we're going too far with that now, where players' names and stuff like that, because if you call a player by his first name, you better know all 30 names. Because I remember I had this conversation with Wayne Barnes. It was bestie Ireland played Scotland, and I was fourth official as for Six Nations. And then I think it was Blair Kinghorn was on the wing. He got sin-binned in that game 2 years ago, and he just went 14, yellow. But it was Connor, it was bestie going through the match, and then he didn't use a name for, because he didn't know him, because he was playing his first cap.
Yeah.
So that's where it becomes, you know, where the referee perception, oh, you're talking to all the Irish players by their first name, and now there. So I think
it's not a good look.
Yeah, and I remember Tommy O'Donnell said to me at Munster training, do you know JP Doyle? JP's from Dublin, very good referee. He was calling Tommy Move or Tommy 7 Munster. He never said Munster 7. So I was at training, and Tommy said, do you know JP Doyle? I said, yeah, why? He said, can you do me a favour? I said, yeah. I said, tell him to stop calling me by my name when I'm ref. Just tell me to move or 7, because I don't know him. Wow. So players just want to be refed. I'm sure you can have a conversation in downtime, Andrew, come here, just calm down, or Andrew, can you do this for me? But not on an air, live, communicating players' names. I think no one we need to be careful.
It's no one balance. In the history of the world who's been told to calm down has ever calmed down.
Yeah, relax. Yeah, relax.
I suppose you're trying, like, again, going back to Joe Marler point, like, you don't want to lose the characters in the game then as well, because that was the beauty of it, and Nigel Owens is a character. You can go back to Wiry Sexton, like, what a character, like, yeah. The stories that he has, and Jimmy Clancy fellas in Limerick, like, I remember Wiry, my dad told me a story about Wiry Sexton. He was touch judging in a Young Munsters home match, and he put his flag up for a Young Munsters player putting his foot in touch, and one of the crowd behind was there. Ah, Wiry, you're only a bollocks. Yeah. And Wiry was like, as you said, talked to the crowd. He's like, I'll have you know, my father was a founding member of this club, and your man goes, he was only a bollocks as well. Yeah, and he tells that story as well.
He tells
the
story very well, yeah. It's a great story. Yeah.
And Jimmy Clancy, another fella, used to, like, coach, but he kind of wanted your team to win or something like that. He kind of, like, Marcus Moore, I remember telling me in a Junior Cup final for St. Munchen's, where they had one player, Ian Ryan, who used to be the master, just taking a quick tap and running through players. And it was the last play of the game. They were a few points up, and they got a penalty, you know, in their own 22. When Ian Ryan went to take a quick tap, and Jimmy Clancy just goes, "Hold on, it's like, kick it out, and I'll blow it up." And they blew it up. They kicked it out, and blew it up. They won the Junior Cup. Like, so, you definitely don't want to see that go out of the game as well, do you?
Yeah, I think there was another one there. The RUC, as they were formerly, the Royal Ulster Conservatives, and the Irish Guards. They basically played each other in a game of rugby every year. Belfast to Limerick. Unbelievable digging match every year between the two. But Jimmy Clancy was refereeing the match, and all hell broke loose, and he called the two teams in. He said, lads, if this doesn't stop, I'm going to call the guards. And it was a big joke, and they got on with the game after that. Yeah, it's a good story, that. He was a character for sure.
He was a character. He used to cycle to all the games, remember that? Like,
yeah.
Well, look, that's all fascinating stuff, man. I think we've taken up loads of your time. We're going to take a quick break, and then we've got the Guinness Pint Predictors, and I think I have a feckin' forfeit. Take a quick break.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, welcome back to part three. That was brilliant. Johnny Lacey, what a legend.
Right up there.
Yeah, we've learned in
my new favourite ref.
Is he?
Yeah.
Paul. Time. You'll be in that little section in the stand now just with your referee flag. We've learned in the break from Midi Olympique that there's a...
I believe that translates as Middle Olympics.
Well, Middle Olympics have decided that these games aren't going ahead at the weekend, but it's obviously hasn't been confirmed. But if you're listening to this from the future... And we just we know, like, but we're going to do our Guinness match pint predictors anyway. I lost at the weekend.
You laughed at me. I suggested Scotland were going to beat France. France are back.
where they should be.
They're crap again.
I have been saying this for weeks. France, flattered to deceive. They are a little bit back, but they're nowhere near the finished product.
No.
And they just resorted to type again at the weekend.
They got a bit roared by the referee.
I think so, yeah. Should ask John about that.
I should have. But yeah, they were. Scotland played well. They played well.
Scotland were brilliant, to be fair.
And again, what about Adam Hastings? Appalled by his parents kissing in the crowd.
That was so good, man.
What happened? I saw the clip of it, but I didn't see what his reaction was.
He did he? He looked up the big screen. He was like, bleh. It's like a 12-year-old. When your parents kiss in front of you when you're a kid, you're like, ah.
It was gold. But they were impressive. So well done.
Yeah, you predicted they'd win.
Yeah.
You got it right. For next weekend, for these games, if they go ahead, what are your predictions?
Who's playing next weekend? I think Ireland will beat France in Paris if it goes ahead, narrowly. I think we'll get a bit of a backlash from France, but ultimately they'll just implode the same way they always do. Wales, Scotland, where is that game?
Murray.
That's in Cardiff, yeah.
Is it Curry?
Yeah.
Cardiff.
Murray Cardiff. I'd say again you'll get a bit of a reaction from Wales.
Okay.
Like Wales by 5.
Okay.
And then that's it. Italy, England hasn't been played.
Oh yeah.
It's definitely off, isn't it?
That's definitely off. Yeah.
So yeah, sorry. Ireland by 3 and Wales by 5.
Okay. I have to take this seriously now. My position on the match point Guinness Legends League is I'm getting lower. I'm getting close to Flannery. Like,
yeah,
he's rock bottom, but I'm kind of dropping.
He never turns up when he's bottom of us three, does he?
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Did he have a reason for not turning up today?
I think he's moving house or something like that.
He's moving house last week. The week before.
He had to do that dance this week. That's why he didn't show up. I'm going to go... yeah, Ireland to beat France. I'd love if that was behind closed doors. How mad would that be?
Yeah.
Be like an eerie zombie game, like an AIL game or something like that.
Yeah.
It'd be so different to see what the atmosphere would be like or how it would affect the game.
Yeah.
How it would affect us watching the game. What it would, you know, would it be as energetic? Would it be as, I don't know.
Has that happened before?
I've never seen that.
Six Nations, it's never happened, has it?
Never seen it in any game.
I don't think I've ever seen that in Six Nations before.
I'll go Ireland by 6, and I'll go Wales by 3. Huh. There you go. So if you want to get involved, download the Matchpoint app and join our league. You have to type in Horie, that's Horie, and you get to join the House of Rugby League. But there is a forfeit for me.
So more generally, though, we're trying to get people sign up, and we want Penguin interaction. I love it when the Penguins get on to us on Twitter and correct us and give us a bit of insight and information.
Yeah.
Do you remember we were talking about Cudmore? Someone then, did you see this tweet?
Yes. Mm.
Someone was able to give
Found
us
him.
A, yeah, about his brother. He was. Do you remember what the tweet was?
Was he an X-Man? You think he was an X-Man? Yes. Times, yeah.
Yeah, he was. He was an Avenger, was it?
Yes.
Either an Avenger or X-Men.
Brilliant. He's a stuntman or something. Or he does those. He's a big lad, like, so they have him in a few of these action movies, yeah.
Also, any Doctor Penguins out there maybe could provide us, you know, a bit of help, some friendly advice on the virus.
That'd be great.
And how to survive.
Yeah.
Not just doctors, actually.
Survival skills penguins.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Everything. We want it all. I just want to hear it all.
Okay. I want them all to chip in on my forfeit as well. I want the Penguins to help me out.
Pat, have you an idea for this one?
Yeah, this actually came from one of our Penguins in the Facebook group. They said Leinster don't really have any great chants at the moment, so it'd be great because Barry's in a band if he came up with a good chant for Leinster rugby.
Yeah. You were at a birthday at the weekend singing songs, your sister's birthday. And I just imagine, so it was obviously all your family there at the party.
Yeah.
I just imagined you started singing a Hermit Green song.
Yeah.
I just imagined then you go like that to your family.
None of them know.
And none of them the words.
I actually didn't know the words. If you look at the video I put up. It's a song I wrote for her called Make It Better. So obviously when it's her birthday, I Lovely. Sing it to her,
it's lovely.
She gets mortified by it. But it's good. Actually, we have a new song out this week. It's called Afterglow. Might get Paul to play a little snippet of it. Yeah, it's going really well. Thank you for all your kind comments. All the Penguins are very kind about that as well. But I've penned myself a Leinster song, right?
Mm-hmm.
It might sound like another song that you might know, but it's just a coincidence. I need your help, though.
Uh-huh.
So can you do a bass line for me?
Yeah, I slab the bass.
I have to give you the bass line.
Oh.
And Pat, I might need you to do some woos in the second verse.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
It feels so, like we're all doing this forfeit, Barry. Whenever it's kind of more meant for you.
I'm off camera, I don't really mind. You're really slapping the imaginary bass over there.
Boom, ba-boom, 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 boom, boom, ba-boom, boom, boom.
Barry, that's quite a complicated...
You know what it is, don't you?
Ba-boom, ba-boom. Boom, 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 boom. What is that?
Stir it up by Bob Marley. Marley.
Bob, Bob.
Go on, give it a go.
Boom, 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 boom,
boom. Continue.
Boom, 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 boom.
It's been a long, long time.
Boom. Boom, 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 boom.
Since you not have.
Boom, 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 boom.
You're getting this sorry. Do you know this bass line?
Boom, boom. Can you take over?
No, it's let you go.
Here, I'll just.
You do the drums, right?
I'm glad.
It's been a long, long time since you have not scored a try. And I will not lie, that this could make a monster man cry, 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 cry. Leinster it up. Boom, boom, ba-boom, boom, boom, ba-boom, boom, boom. Leinster it up. Ba-boom, 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 boom. Little darling, Leinster it up. Ba-boom, 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 boom, boom, ba-boom, boom, boom. Take some James low. Add a dash of Gary Ringrose.
Ooh,
Ringrose. A lump of James Ryan. Ryan, Ryan, Ryan. Now you've got yourself a Leinster lion, a lion from Zion, Zion, Zion. Leinster it up. Ba-doom, 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 little darling, let's stir it up.
Wow, this is ba-doom, catchy.
Ba-doom, 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 ba-doom. You're welcome, Leinster.
Oh,
that's gonna catch on. So if any Penguins would like to add a rap to that, I could perform that next week. Or you could do the rap, if it's your forfeit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That actually, our Penguins actually could improve upon that there and just... That's pretty good.
There'd be no improvements to be made in that.
Oh, shit.
That's amazing.
It will be difficult to get that chant going in the crowd, though.
I thought you'd be better with the bass line, so it would...
I don't know if we can entirely blame the bass line.
If you could have one section of the crowd in the bass line, someone doing like a little offbeat guitar bit.
Yeah.
I think it would work. Look, it's far-fetched, but we'll see. See how it goes.
Yeah.
That was stressful. Brilliant. Thank you, Pat. Cheers. Thanks for your woos. That was amazing. Right, I think we better leave it there, lads. Thank you to everybody for tuning in and for listening and for watching on YouTube. Please don't leave an abusive comment. to Ian, to Paul, to Pat, to Anthony, thank you so much for putting the show together. To Johnny Lacey, what a great guest.
We are doing each episode like it's our last.
Yeah.
And we're living each day like it's our last.
Stay safe out there. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe. Together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe. Together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.